Okay, Celeste, thanks so much. Nick Childs joins us now, BBC defense and security correspondent. In the past 24 hours, the Washington Post has reported details of a confidential report from Stanley McChrystal, the commander of U.S. and NATO forces in Afghanistan, that reportedly calls for more troops in Afghanistan. Nick Childs, how is the report in the Washington Post being greeted on the ground by defense officials in Afghanistan and over there in London, where London, of course, is part of the NATO coalition?
Well, I think people are bracing themselves for this to some extent. We've had a sense of the thrust of what General McChrystal was going to say and has been saying in this report. It's the details and the language and the timing, I think, that are the issues. He's being very stark in terms of his language, saying unless he gets more resources, the mission essentially will likely result in failure, is one of the quotes, and that Afghan people face a crisis of confidence in the mission and the government, and that basically in the next 12 months, something has to be turned around in terms of taking the initiative, otherwise it won't be possible to defeat the insurgency. So it's the language involved, but also the timing. Clearly, in the United States, one gets the impression that the Obama administration wants to push the issue of troop numbers sideways because it's so politically sensitive, and of course it's very sensitive here on a day when Italy is burying six troops who were killed in Afghanistan.
Nick Childs, BBC defense and security correspondent. The implications of the McChrystal report will be focused all week on by the administration as clarity on the strategy in Afghanistan is certainly on the minds of the Obama administration, and they spoke about that over the weekend in the media blitz on all of the Sunday talk shows. But another look at Afghanistan. Now U.S. troops have been fighting there for 8 years. And if you gauge the length of the U.S. involvement in Vietnam as from August 1964, which was when the Gulf of Tonkin incident occurred and the resolution was passed, which authorized U.S. troops under President Johnson, if you gauge the war from then to April 1975, when the U.S. evacuation from Saigon was completed, that war was also 8 years.
I don't have a deadline for withdrawal, but I'm certainly not somebody who believes in indefinite occupations of other countries.
Barack Obama, speaking there over the weekend, was a child during much of the Vietnam era. But the question of whether Afghanistan will become President Obama's Vietnam is a deeply personal one for the man in charge of policy in Afghanistan and Pakistan, Richard Holbrook. I'm joined now by George Packer. He's a staff writer for The New Yorker magazine with a profile of Richard Holbrook in the current issue. Welcome, George.
Hi, John.
So, George, this article is filled with so many fabulous stories about how Richard Holbrook began his career, his diplomatic career, in Vietnam. And indeed, when he was given the job and announced as the envoy to Afghanistan and Pakistan, one of the people he singled out in the audience was someone he worked with in Vietnam. Tell us that story.
Right. Well, it was at the State Department on January 22nd, and John Negroponte was sitting in one of the front rows, and Holbrook nodded to him and told the audience that they had first met in Saigon in 1964. They'd become roommates, and then he added, I hope we will have more success this time, or I hope we'll have a better outcome this time, and smiled. And Vietnam is it doesn't haunt Holbrook. He's not paralyzed by it. He's not ridden with the ghosts of it, but it's just there all the time, and it comes up all the time, even when he says he'd rather not talk about it. And by the way, I think you should probably date it from 61, because that's when American advisors first started going and dying in Vietnam. Holbrook himself has said many times, this war will be longer. This war in Afghanistan will be the longest in American history, and even longer than the 14 years of our involvement in Vietnam. That's something he was saying quite a bit until he got this job, and he's kind of toned down that kind of talk since he got the job.
Well, let's listen to the tone of Richard Holbrook speaking in July of this year.
I believe, and I will take the position, that we have a national interest to help Pakistan through its troubles. This is not Vietnam. It is not an overextension of our efforts. It seems to me it's a strategic necessity.
You can almost hear the pulling back and the caution in his voice. Here's someone who's emailed, you report about it in your article, that it's worse than the Nam, comparing Afghanistan to Vietnam. Does he have a sense of that in your witnessing him moving around both Pakistan and Afghanistan?
Well, I think two things about that. First, I think Holbrook truly believes that Vietnam, and he learned this the hard way by working on it for 7 years in his 20s, was a war that we didn't need to fight. We couldn't win it, and we didn't need to fight it. But I think he truly believes that we need to be in Afghanistan. We need to try to influence Pakistan, because this, unlike Vietnam, he thinks is directly connected to our security. There's a real strategic threat. On the other hand, how can he not see the parallels? We're trying to reform a corrupt and weak government in Kabul as we were in Saigon. There's a rural insurgency that is spreading through large parts of the country. There's an enemy sanctuary across the border in Pakistan. All of those things are eerily reminiscent of Vietnam. And I think the hardest thing to figure out, and the thing that Holbrook and America never figured out of Vietnam, is how do you get another government on which our security seems to be riding to become a better government? We don't know how to do that. And I think that's the thing that over and over again I saw Holbrook running up against and looking for different ways to do it. He knows that it didn't work in Vietnam. He learned a lot from that war. In that sense, his experience in Vietnam, rather than crippling him, I think has been a help to him. And yet here he is facing something very similar in Kabul with the Karzai government, and I don't think he knows how to go ahead and do it.
Well, you know, he wrote, Richard Holbrooke did famously, that about Vietnam, the smartest guy in the room is often wrong. Holbrooke has a reputation for thinking of himself as the smartest guy in the room, and he has as many friends as enemies. You talk about that in your piece.
Well, and it may be that in years to come, historians will look back and say Richard Holbrooke didn't listen to the advice of people who weren't on the inside, just as Robert McNamara didn't listen to people who were not on the inside. But I also think, you know, I saw Holbrooke very closely in Afghanistan. He was doing what McNamara and Bundy never did. He was going to the source in province after province and really asking skeptical questions and informing himself about local realities and, in a sense, being more pessimistic and more skeptical than the commanders on the ground, which is something that McNamara never did. Instead, McNamara looked for commanders who would tell him what he wanted to hear. So, I mean, Holbrooke was an internal critic during Vietnam. He started out in a rural province in the Mekong Delta as a pacification officer, and because he was so close to the peasantry and to the rural war, he saw very quickly that David Halberstam and Neil Sheehan were reporting the real war and that official channels were not. So he has it. I think he has the ability to see beyond, you know, the blinkered view that inevitably government officials have, because they see it through a bubble, and through a bubble that's driven by the desire to bring good news back to Washington. But there's a limit to that, and it may be that right now there are people he should be listening to who just don't have his ear because they're not on the inside.
Well, you end on something of a pessimistic note, just what you're saying right there, but there are fascinating details in this profile of Richard Holbrooke in the latest edition of The New Yorker magazine, including he got everything he wanted except his own plane. George Packer, thanks so much for joining us.